Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name's Andy Warren. I'm here just with Stuart Watson. We've both got our shorts on. It's hot. It's too hot. We've just been to the Ipswich Town Open Day briefly, and it's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they'll probably get record numbers there this year. I think 5,000 or so last year. The queues around the block suggest they might top that this time around.
Yeah.
Everyone's having a good time, aren't they?
Yeah, really nice to see. Lots of young fans around, a few James Norwood shirts spotted. Mm-hmm. People getting excited for the new season. Second podcast of the week for us, no Mark Heath today. He's being busy and important elsewhere, as he tells us so often, just me and you. But we've got quite a lot to talk about, Stu, so probably a strictly business podcast.
Yes.
This one.
No big questions, no mailbag, let's just get into it.
Pure business. Should we start with Alan Judge? That is the only topic in town, for Ipswich Town, really, at the moment. We've seen him, he's here, he's signing autographs, he's had his picture taken for the new squad photo, but QPR are very keen on him, and Paul Lambert says that he has told him that he's quite keen to move on.
Yeah, a little bit surprised that Paul went public with that after the game on Tuesday night at Notts County. Don't know if that weakens Ipswich's hand a little bit, the fact that Judge's reputation is now a little bit, rightly or wrongly, sullied with the fans. Mixed reaction to it, from what I've seen on Twitter and just speaking to people in person just now. It's no surprise that he's interested in going. Let's be fair. Let's backtrack a little bit. When he signs for Ipswich, this QPR situation wasn't one. Warburton wasn't there, but now it's all falling into place. Warburton, the manager he's played his best football under, has gone there. It's QPR, it's West London, it's where his young family have been based for so long. It's a level higher. I don't think money is probably anywhere near the top of the factors as to why he'd want to go. I think it will come purely down to geography, and as young dads ourselves, I think you can kind of sympathise with that. But he signed the contract, and Ipswich have looked to build their team around him, and it's their prerogative. If they want to put their foot down, they sure can.
Anyone that's commuted for work will understand that you don't want to be driving from West London to Ipswich for work. I completely get it. I've done that myself. Don't like it. And I can't imagine doing it also with children at home. It must be a nightmare. But you're right. He signed a contract with Ipswich, and that's why it's important now that Ipswich do what is right for them. I think the brief amount we know of Alan as a character tells me that he's not kind of kicking and screaming. He's not, you know, refusing to be
slammed in a transfer.
No,
request.
He certainly has not. He's not refusing to train, although he does still have a big old cast on his wrist from that broken wrist or anything like that. And if the transfer deadline for the Championship is August the 8th, if he's still here beyond that, you get the impression that he's the kind of guy that would very much be committed to what he's doing, because in essence he's happy at Ipswich. He signed that contract, but this QPR situation, as we've said, has emerged, and it's a perfect storm for him.
And it could be one where both parties feel like they're winners out of it, as long as Ipswich Town get the value that they want for him. You know, a player that they've signed for free just a few weeks ago, if you're then talking about getting a decent fee, and I don't really know where the tipping point is in that. I think QPR started out about 250, 450 is the latest bid that's been knocked back. Where's good money for someone that's 30s, had injury problems? Hard to judge him on what he's done. I've seen people suddenly going, well, he won no goals, one assist. I mean, he was semi-fit. He was playing in a struggling team. Come on, we saw enough in Alan Judge to know that he would be a top, once fully fit, he should be a top player in League One. So yeah. Let's not start downgrading his qualities.
That's
on that
where
front.
The frustration comes, isn't it? Because it's the hope of what he could be rather than what we've seen he is. What he was okay. He did okay for Ipswich. He got them moving a little bit more creativity there. Obviously didn't have the end product, but it's the hope of what he can be. He's central to Lambert's plans, and that's why they have to get top money. It's like you talk about what fee is right for an injured 30-year-old who's had real problems, but I think it's a little bit more than that, because he's not just that to Ipswich. He's their centrepiece alongside James Norwood. So to have that ripped out on what will be the eve of the season essentially is massive. So you have to be compensated hugely for that. And I don't know where to begin with a valuation, but it's not 450 or 250 grand.
We shall see on that one. The fact that Teddy Bishop is now out for a little while as well, who would have been the like-for-like sort of number 10 swap, makes it all the tougher as well, really. Just the number of injuries in general, the fact that we're now talking about Alan potentially leaving as well, it's slightly worrying. A few weeks ago I wrote a piece saying that, well, the strength of Ipswich Town's position is that it's not like last year. They're in a stable position. The manager's in early. He's doing some of his business early. It's not like Waghorn and Garner leaving late and then them scrambling to get replacements. And yet, here we are with two trialist centre-backs that they're looking at this stage of the summer, that if judged, that could go right to the wire. Dazelle's situation could go right to the wire, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And that's never a good position to be doing your business from.
There's quite a few similarities to the Waghorn deal last summer, isn't there, with Judge? But what obviously a different manager, but what lessons do you think Ipswich need to have learnt from how that one was handled last summer? I'm not convinced they maximised what they could have got for Martin Waghorn last summer, the way that worked out.
No. They waited and waited to try and maximise the fee, didn't they? And I don't think they ended up getting anywhere near the fee. I think they started off talking about 8 million and ended up coming down to about 5.5 in the end, because ultimately they decided it wasn't worth keeping a player whose head had been turned. And Martin's a very similar character to Alan, in talking about someone that wasn't really agitating, and that you would feel that if he stayed, I still felt that Martin is a sort of character that would continue to give his all. But I think sometimes managers feel that if your heart and mind is not completely with a football club at that point, then it's best to get the money and get in someone that's hungry and wants to sort of do it here and now for you.
It's so similar and in so many ways so sad, really, because Waghorn was here a year, loved it here, his whole family moved down, parents, everything, the whole lot moved, loved the area. But then your head gets turned by something that you feel you can't turn down, which was in this case Frank Lampard and Derby. In this case for Alan Judge, it's Mark Warburton and staying at home at QPR. But that's kind of where Ipswich are at, aren't they? They're not the head turner anymore.
No, yeah. But perhaps Ipswich need to be a little bit less soft in these scenarios. I can go back to Christoph Behrer, that was out of contract, but they had another year's option on him. And you know, he had a family situation where he wanted to get back up to Scotland to be nearer his son or daughter. And Ipswich said, okay, fair enough, we won't stand in your way. But there has to become a point where it's business decisions are made, and that must happen in other walks of life, that you go, well, sorry, we've got to protect ourselves a little bit in these scenarios. So if it works out for Ipswich, if they get the right money for Judge, then so be it. But if the bidding doesn't reach the levels that they want it to be, sorry, Alan, you know, we need you and you're staying. And he'll soon get his head around that and people move on quick enough.
I think the trouble with this one, Waghorn was a bit different in that there were, three, four clubs in the bidding as well. I think Ipswich were trying to get the bidding up there. This is QPR or nothing for Alan Judge. It's a unique set of circumstances. As I don't think he would feel the same about a move to the Championship with Birmingham or anything like that. It's kind of QPR or nothing. So in that regard, I do wonder whether QPR bidding will reach Ipswich's level if they hold out for a high fee.
Yeah. Well, I know they've got the Freeman money, but they're not swimming with cash. They're under a soft transfer embargo, aren't they? And they've got to be a bit careful with what they're doing as well. So this might not happen, and that's why I'm a little bit surprised that Paul kind of went public with it, because if Alan does stay, unfortunately, with some of the fans, that will be a black mark against his name a bit, which is a shame. But
yeah,
not see how it pans out.
Not seen him in pre-season yet either, have we? Because of the wrist injury.
Nope, one of a few, isn't he? And that's the concern, isn't it?
Yep. You mentioned Andre Dizel earlier. Should we move on?
Yep.
Move on to that one. Premier League. We know that Premier League clubs know about Andre Dizel. That's been ongoing since he scored that goal at, and before really, since he sort of scored that goal at Sheffield Wednesday in 2016. But Norwich being linked with him and being being interested in him is a different kettle of fish to get your head around.
Talk about a perfect storm. Crikey, how have we gone from last season? We kept talking about how have we gone from the Ipswich Norwich 1-1 draw, the tide could be turning, to then promoted, Ipswich relegated, and now we're talking about potential Checker Trade Trophy clashes, and now them looking to sign the epitome of one of our own, the son of Jason Dizel, who has probably been the most vocal ex-Ipswich player with his sort of hatred, inverted commas, of the Canaries. I've had many conversations with him about going up to Norwich and getting dogs abuse in the street, and it's just a staggering situation that this could happen, and it could, you know. People go, oh, there's no way Jason would let it happen, there's no way the Dizel family in general would let it happen. Andre isn't Jason. Jason grew up a stone's throw from the ground, all played his kickabout on the park opposite Portman Road, used to queue up outside the ground to get in for the last 15 minutes when it was free. You know, he has got the club in his blood. I think for Andre, it might be a little bit different. He hasn't quite got the same, it's more of a profession, a career for him. These young players now are a different breed. I think they're more career-minded in many respects. I don't know what will be in his mind if it gets to that stage, and that's the big if. But all I do know is there's a year left on his contract. Ipswich have allowed that situation to run to this point, which puts them in a weak position now. And now they're going to have to start talking about a new contract when they haven't probably got bags of money to spend in terms of wages, or, again, trying to get as much fee as possible for him. And I don't know which way that's going to go. I think I can see that those talks going right the way down to the wire.
If you remove the yellow and green stain or tint from this, in theory, it's a really good move for him, isn't it? A Premier League club and a team that play the style of football that really suits his game. If you remove the fact it's Norwich, it's a really good move for him if it came to that.
Yeah. He could have gone to Liverpool 2 years ago. I didn't know it had got that close at the time, but subsequently I've learned that that was there for him and they turned it down because they didn't feel that that was the right time and it was best to stay at Ipswich, get game time, not get lost and be one of these players that disappears in youth teams and gets loaned out. And then the knee injury happens, he's out for a year, and since he's come back, let's be honest, we all know how good he is or what he could be, but it's not really happened for him because he's been in a struggling team. It's been hard for him to show what he's all about. We've not seen Andre Dizel boss football games yet and take games by the scruff of the neck, and there are still things that he's working on, and he might take a step back and go, is League One football, is this environment the right place for me to shine? Is, if you were to name a starting 11 for the opening day now, even with Nolan injured, even with Bishop injured, I would say he might get in 50% of fans' teams. If you said name your team now, other people might go for Scoos, for Downs, for Hughes if he's fit. So if you're talking about someone who's not even a guaranteed starter at this stage and there's good money on the table and he's going into the last year of his contract, Ipswich have got a decision to make here. But the fact that it's Norwich that are in that list just clouds the issue slightly.
That won't be an issue for the money side of the football club, though. Surely Marcus Evans isn't, if he thinks that selling Andre Dizel for, I don't even know what fee we're talking about here, but if we're talking about selling Andre Dizel for that fee, surely Evans, the Norwich thing isn't going to be an issue for him.
The PR perspective comes into it from his point of view that...
Not if it's, I wouldn't, let's use £5 million as just a nominal figure that we're talking about. If he's offered that and he thinks Ipswich Town need £5 million, it's not on offer from anybody else. They've not sold Judge, for example. Bart's not gone.
Yeah.
Is he going to turn that down just because it's from Norwich?
Probably not just because it's from Norwich. I think he does need to. There's a few things stacking up against him from a PR point of view here. If the Judge thing was to happen, got the injuries going against him. If they don't start next season well, then all of this stuff starts to bubble to the surface. And Dizel going to Norwich could be a bit of a straw that breaks the camel's back for some. And I think that you would have to take that into account. He's turned down bids before. People will now go, oh, they first hint of interest and he sells the crown jewels. He's turned down big money for McGoldrick. He turned down big money for Murphy off the back of the 27 goals. There's been others along the way too. So, yeah, I guess they'll put all sentiment to one side and decide what they feel is the best thing to do for the football club. But whatever money they get in from these players, it's very difficult to go out and replace them.
This is the problem, particularly with Judge, isn't it? Because Andre, if you sold him, I don't know if you'd need a like-for-like replacement, assuming you haven't sold Judge. But if you sell Judge, he's slotted in for that number 10 spot in the team. You sell him, there's nobody else to fill it. So very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. What else we got to talk about? Another injury, which now makes 10. Tristan Nydam. That wasn't very nice, was it? Broken ankle for him. 6 months out. Some ligament damage there as well.
Yeah, I think Paul Lambert described it as horrific viewing. I think, you know, there was just a deadly hush around Meadow Lane when it happened. Lambert's spot on. No blame attached to the Notts County player. It was just a full-blooded sort of 50-50 challenge that Tristan came off worse with, but you knew he was in trouble straight away. It happened outside of the pitch and you could hear the yelps of pain. Six months out for him, and it's another one. It's just ridiculous. We've seen Toto pull his hamstring over in Germany. We saw, what was the other injury over there? Bishop obviously, has done his knee.
We've just seen him, haven't we, with a right old contraption on his right on his right knee.
Robotic sort of contraption on there. So
Robo-Teddy.
They didn't need that on top of, and we also hoped, obviously, that John Nolan, Gwion Edwards, Alan Judge would be back in the mix by this point, but none of them have had a kick of friendly action so far, so they've not had that full pre-season under their belts either. It's not good. You could put together a fairly decent team out of the players that are sidelined at the moment.
Yeah, you could. I would argue that Nolan, Edwards, Judge, Lancaster and Siala, that's six straight off the bat that
probably
would all start, they're all starters. And that's not a good situation to be in.
No, it feels like a bit of a curse now. And again, it's another stick to beat the club with. Oh, it must be doing our sports science on the cheap and something must be wrong there. Sports science got nothing to do with Tristan Nydam breaking his ankle in a tackle. I know people go, oh, McGoldrick's gone away and he's been fully fit, and Webster's gone away and been fully fit. There might be, we don't know, do we? I don't know if some of the muscle injuries are down to things that they could or couldn't do better, but a lot of it, a hell of a lot of it, has come down to bad luck.
Yeah, and you can't legislate for that, can you? But that leaves a bit of a shell of a team almost, doesn't it? We were talking about this on the way back from Notts County the other night. We maybe talk about that game a little bit in a minute, about potential starting lineups, and there are a few holes there that, you know, there are men to fill them, but not ones that we would have expected to be in the conversation for opening day starters just a few weeks ago. Danny Rowe being one of them, Jordan Roberts being another.
Who knows is going to start centre half at the moment with obviously Luke James is suspended for the Burton game. So they've had a look at two trialists thus far. They've looked okay in the game. I didn't see the Colchester game, but from what I saw at Notts County, they were both okay. But I don't know if there's much of a yardstick in terms of what they're capable of long term. Obviously, Guthrie provides a bit of left-footed balance. I thought he had an okay first half, and likewise Wilson was fine. Second half did what they had to, really, but Lambert clearly doesn't want to play the two young kids together, no. Does he? Which is understandable.
Yeah, we haven't seen them together as a pair yet, which you would think if there was any chance of that being the opening day starting, you would have seen them together by now, which we haven't. So you could, who it is, I don't know, but you can almost probably rule that out.
Yeah, so that's all up in the air. Still right back, I think, is still very much up in the air. Josh Emmanuel and Donassian are the two right back choices, neither of whom got a huge look in under Lambert last year. And then Josh made a mistake for the goal at Notts County, got subbed at half time. And now they've been linked to a right back on loan from Birmingham.
Josh Dacres Cogley, who is 23. He's played all his career at Birmingham, but has, I think he's got like 18 professional appearances to his name. So
it's the equivalent of Miles Kenlock or someone like that, who's in their early 20s that has had appearances left, right and centre. So yeah, it's not an ideal situation, is it? I if everyone had been fully fit, then I wouldn't have worried too much about the lack of recruitment. In many ways, I didn't want them to go out and sign 6, 7, 8 players this year. I wanted them to kind of go with the core of what they've got and hope that the League One players signed by Hurst, League One, League Two players would step up at a more appropriate level. And I thought we saw signs of that some of the kids would start to blossom. But the injuries are a concern, and they're not short-term ones, some of them, either, are they?
No. For argument's sake, if you talk about a starting lineup of, maybe we'll talk about this one in particular in a minute, Holy or Barton goal, Donassian, Chambers, Ntiala, Kenlock, Skews, Nolan, Edwards, Judge, Lancaster, Norwood. That's a nice looking team, isn't it? But now you're talking about an undecided on the goalkeeper, a right back, probably Donassian at this stage, unless they sign them, don't know, at centre back, Miles Kenlock, left back, Skews will start. And then from there on in, you don't, apart from Norwood in the, up front, it's just not got the same feel to it.
No, but then on the flip side of that, you could be talking about a midfield still of Skews, Hughes, which is a major positive of this pre-season, the big positive. 90 minutes for him, he's appeared in all four match days so far. So Skews, Hughes, Downs / Dazell, that's still not a bad midfield three. The front third is perhaps where they're looking a little light, but Norwood, we're excited by what he might be able to do. Danny Rowe, I think, Rowe's is someone really that's really stepped up in pre-season and might be someone that comes from nowhere. They're probably, they're a little bit light. Who's going to be playing on the other side of that? Garbutt, probably on the left. Yeah. Who?
Neither of us convinced by him just yet, but you've got to remember where he's at fitness-wise.
He's not jumped off the page in the two games thus far, but that's not to say he won't going further forwards. Mm. But that's still not a bad team on paper. Defensively, maybe a little bit weaker. But Kenlock, I think we all felt that he deserved his chance to step up at left back. Donassian and Emmanuel have both played at League One level and done it before. It's just that centre half issue. But Luke's only missing one game. Yeah. Let's not overplay that.
It often feels like that isn't the case. It kind of feels like he's vanished. Mm. The way that you find yourself thinking about this situation, it feels like actually Luke Chambers has just vanished and there's nobody. But it is just one game.
Yeah, and that's for me, I might be tempted not to panic and rush into signing a short-term signing for a trialist. I know Lambert's got reservations about playing Wolfenden and Ndaba, but if it's for one game, then maybe you need to take that risk, and then Chambers comes back the next game, and then Ntiala's back in September time, hopefully. We keep talking about not blocking the pathway for them. The whole point is that you keep them there so that when scenarios like this emerge, you use them. So we'll see. Ravaged by injury, but you can still put out a team that's not horrendous on paper when you look at it. So I guess that's a positive as well.
If you're picking one of the young from what you've seen, if you're picking one of the younger defenders to partner Chambers for August until Toto comes back, who are you picking?
Wolfenden, because he's had the loan spell at Swindon, played every game, virtually rave reviews there by all accounts. we've seen him in the first team more, he would be the obvious one. The only caveat is that Corey Ndarbo offers the left foot balance, and I do like that. And I think Lambert's very big on it as well. Yeah.
I'd be tempted to put him in, you know. I think
Corey,
yeah, I think he would be the one that I would go with. I know he's not played. I would also be tempted. What's that?
Don't worry.
Just your wedding ring. Yeah. Shouldn't be taking that off, Mrs. Watson. Mrs. Watson, beware. Watson's on the prowl. sorry, no nonsense. This is strictly business podcast. I'd still be tempted to go with Luke Wolfenden as a right back. You know, if you're not completely sold on either Danasian or Emmanuel.
Luke Wolfenden as a right back and Junoy Danasian as a centre back option. You know, Paul Lambert was absolutely adamant when he arrived that Junoy Danasian is a centre back. He is a centre back. You know, he couldn't have been more clear. He'd had him at Aston Villa years ago when he was a centre back. And that was kind of a big part of the reason that they let him out the building. Just did not cross his mind that he's a right back. But now he seems to be sort of now considered as a right back. Now they need centre backs.
Yeah,
and
having played left back for Accrington.
Yeah. And you're right about Wolfenden. I saw him play in the Crystal Palace Cup game when that really young team, you know, put in a really good display there against a very strong Crystal Palace side. And Wolfenden was man of the match. He was his pace against, I remember, Andros Townsend came on, fresh legs of Townsend, and he matched him stride for stride. But I think if either of those options were being considered, we'd have seen it trialled in pre-season at this stage. We've got one friendly to go, and neither of them have played those roles. So I think we can discount both of those.
I don't think you should discount it.
No.
But I think you can. Cambridge is the final friendly this weekend. 1 p.m. kickoff at the Abbey Stadium. Is it the Abbey Stadium? It's the Abbey Stadium, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We're expecting this to be something resembling the opening day team, aren't we? Surely.
It's got to be at this stage, isn't it? I think whoever starts in goal, that will tell us who's getting the nod there. The rotation means that, you know, it will be Holy, you would have thought, because Bart played on Tuesday night. So is that a bit of an inkling that Holy starts against Cambridge and then gets the nod again against Burton?
Yeah.
If you're Paul Lambert, you've signed Thomas Holy. He's your man. Bart's someone he inherited, and he hasn't seen a lot of good from him thus far. We know what Bart's all about. Paul Lambert's just going on reputation, and Bart has made a mistake in pre-season so far as well. It's a shame that it all kind of unravelled the way it did. I think it probably would have been right for all parties, that move, and it hasn't happened. So that's going to be intriguing, that one.
I've started writing something about this. Whether I finish it or not, who knows? Might be a lost piece. Yeah, my gut feeling's Holy on this one. And that would be the sight of seeing Bart on a League One bench. It's just unfathomable, isn't it? Within a year, just over a year since he was at the World Cup.
Yeah.
To be a backup League One goalkeeper with little prospect of a move now, really, you must say. There was some life in the Millwall bid, the Millwall move, apparently, for a couple of weeks after that all happened. That light's gone out now.
The problem there is that everyone else who needed a goalkeeper has probably done their business now.
Yeah, and that would leave him here until January at least. And goalkeepers, if the number one goalkeeper keeps the shirt, you're not getting too much of a look.
Talking about your top earner being your backup goalkeeper in League One, I mean, that is a situation that Ipswich would then probably need to address in January. And then, you know, the money that you get in significantly drops. We were talking about 900,000 for him. So they were turning down bids of 3-4 million last summer. 900 grand's not happened this summer. Goodness knows what the fee will go down to.
You're getting to the point of January. Just nominal fees, aren't you?
To get the wage off of
it. How can you convince someone to spend 900 grand on your backup goalkeeper?
Yeah.
If you're not even playing a medical
at Millwall.
Anyway, he may well start on the opening day.
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope we all hope that we see, you know, the Bart that we know and love back again. But he's had a grueling year mentally. There's been a lot of things going on for Bart. He's lost his father. He's lots of stuff going on for him, and this is another thing that's psychologically that he's going to have to deal with. And you know, I just want to see him back with a smile on his face and and the Bart that we all knew and love.
What else are we looking out for at Cambridge just before we wrap up? What are the other, the makeup of the defence, I guess, is we've discussed there. And who, whether, so if there's some more minutes, I know I said this on the last podcast, but if there are more minutes for Hughes in this game, I'll genuinely start to believe that he could be an opening day starter.
Emil Hughes to start the opening day of the season. What odds would you have got on that not so long ago? A man who could barely finish an under-23s game, or certainly
couldn't
string back-to-back under-23s games. He's not played for the first team since December 2017. That, for me, is the biggest takeaway from pre-season so far. Emir Hughes in League One. Wow. Yeah.
I think I get the impression that I think he was fit to go at the end of last season, I think, but rightly they held him out. There was nothing to be gained from pushing him in April and May, was there?
No, if they've got him to a point now where he's able to go, then they've absolutely done the right thing. So hopefully some of these, at the minute you can probably hear the way we're talking, it feels a little bit like these injuries are mounting up. There's more talk about exits than incomings. It doesn't feel like an ideal preparation at the moment, it doesn't, but I still think there's enough in that squad to be okay. I still think, I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for Ipswich, but I still think they've got enough to hopefully navigate some early choppy waters and come through it. But
I hope
we shall
see. I hope you're right. Right, that's enough from us. Any other business, Stu?
No other business.
No other business on this. Just a short little half an hour second pod of the week. We'll be back next week with a season preview extravaganza, and it'll be massive. It'll be really good.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the season preview extravaganza, which was our most listened to podcast of last season.
Was it?
Yeah. Which, if you listen back to it now, is full of utter nonsense of us talking about mid-table finishes and other people talking about Aaron Drynan.
# new era.
Banging in goals. So yeah, we'll be back.
Listen to us get it spectacularly wrong once again.
Mm. When's that? Thursday. I think we're doing that Thursday.
Okay.
As far as I know. So yeah, listening then. Thanks for listening. Mark will be back on Thursday for the next pod. Like he normally says, do all the following on social media and that, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Follow me and Stu if you want. And we'll see you next time.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.